Hi everybody, my name is Marissa and I want to begin by thanking anyone and everyone who's chosen to listen to this podcast. This is actually my first podcast. This is the first episode that you're hearing. I believe that time is precious and I certainly am not trying to waste your time or mine for that matter. So I wanted to start by giving you guys a brief overview of what the layout of the podcast is going to be. That way, if you're interested in staying tuned, you'll know what you're getting yourself into. So anyway, this is episode one. It's called, I Guess My Parents Aren't Perfect After All. The name of the podcast is The Truth About NPD, Having a Parent with Narcissistic Personality Disorder. So, I am going to start off with the podcast layout. So I'll be making one podcast a week. Each episode will be in a question-answer format, almost as if I'm interviewing myself. The podcast is for people who are interested in narcissistic personalities, NPD, or interested in learning more about family dynamics. And, you know, through my personal experience growing up in a family, being the only daughter of a narcissistic parent, who in this case was my mom, the podcast will also touch on my humble opinions on human nature, society today in America, mental illness, resources and support for the disenfranchised in the U.S., and stuff like that. So, I have started with my first question, what is NPD? Which stands for Narcissistic Personality Disorder, if you guys aren't already aware. So what is NPD? In my humble opinion, NPD is a personality disorder developed in people at a very young age in response to childhood trauma. These personality traits are developed as coping mechanisms for people throughout their lives, which in essence help them to protect their emotions and their feelings, etc., etc. So that is the definition of NPD. There's probably a lot more to it than that, and obviously this is just my humble opinion. That is my humble definition of narcissistic personality disorder, and it's almost just kind of rationalizing for anyone who does have NPD why they have NPD, why this is technically, you know, considered a personality disorder by doctors and professionals and all of that. I think it's the DSM-5. It's actually listed in the DSM-5 as a personality disorder. Anyway, so my next question to myself is, so what was it like growing up with a mother who has narcissistic personality disorder? One word, confusing. Confusing to wrap my head around how my own mother could switch her emotions off towards me, her only daughter, and literally express what felt like little to no empathy towards me as a person, my life, and even, you know, some of the most troubling situations that I had found myself in while growing up. My personal experience growing up in a family, being the only daughter of a narcissistic parent, was, you know, confusing and just troubling. And I'm sure anyone who has been either in a relationship with someone with NPD, or if you thought, you know, maybe this person does have some narcissistic personality traits, or, you know, if you had a family member who had NPD, like in my case, whatever the case may be, you know, it's tough. And I want you guys to know that if you're listening, I'm here for you. You can always reach out to me. I'll give you more information on how to contact me if you have any questions or, you know, just need some advice, some advocacy and stuff like that. Anyway, back to the topic. I'm going to begin by sharing my personal experience with growing up with a narcissistic mother. I think just by explaining in detail my experience in life, events that have happened that I've been through over the years, and giving like detailed examples of what this person has literally put her own blood-related daughter through. And if anything, You know, if what I'm saying sounds even slightly familiar or that you can relate to this, I ask that you join me over the next few episodes in my personal journey in recovering from this type of abuse, looking back on really the past 15 to 20 years of my life. And as I'm getting some space from the chaos of this relationship, I've learned so much about human nature, society today in America, mental illness, and living as a, you know, a minor or a young adult, you know, with a diagnosis, and then, you know, the support and resources for the disenfranchised in the U.S. I ask that once you hear my story, that if you have any questions at all, if you need information about resources to help you get out of your situation, whether it be with a family member or a partner or a significant other, whatever, that you email my personal email or you can find me on social media. My Insta name is at Miss M-I-S-S Marissa M-A-R-I-S-S-A Leonardi, L-E-O-N-A-R-D-I. Again, that's at Miss Marissa Leonardi. Anyway, if you feel comfortable reaching out, please do. I'm available and accessible to help and advise in any way that I can. And I will provide some of my other contact information at the end of the podcast. So if you're still with me, I know I've kind of been all over the place. Again, this is the first episode, but I am trying to, you know, get going with this and pursue this. So, growing up with a narcissistic mom, my experiences growing up in life, I know I mentioned a little bit ago that I do have a diagnosis. So we're going to get into all of that. And if you can relate to anything, great. If not, I'm sorry if I'm wasting your time. So my first question growing up, starting at around age 14 to 15 years old, was, is this type of chaos in my home normal? I'm sure, you know, maybe if you're listening to this, you've asked yourself that question at some point. And my answer that I would receive when I would ask my mom that question was basically, how do you know what normal is? What do you know what normal is basically what she would ask, which I always thought was kind of a scary answer. Honestly, I've asked that so many times over my life to people in my family and just to her specifically. And that is literally the answer that I got every time. It's just basically, how do you know what normal is? I always felt like it can't be normal. I'm looking at all these people, I'm observing all of these people's lives on social media. And I know that doesn't have as much of a, you know, an accurate portrayal sometimes, but even just like knowing people and being friends with people and stuff like that, like I would watch people's lives and I would get to know people and I'm thinking, my life is very different than this. Like my household environment is so much more chaotic. I'm always in crisis, basically. I never know what the heck is going on. So, you know, I would ask that question and that was the answer that I would get. So I grew up in a chaotic household environment. My mom was what most professionals would call a rageful alcoholic. My brother used and was addicted to heroin for most of, you know, the years that I was growing up and going through high school, mainly, you know, throughout my high school and teenage years. And my father is 20 years older than my mom. They are still married. He traveled most of my life for work and business. Wasn't really around all that often. So my mom was essentially his, you know, she made all the rules and she made the major decisions for basically me and my life and everyone in, who was involved in her life. And now my mom is just essentially my father's caretaker. He's almost 80 years old now, so he's older. Anyway, as I said, she has made much of the rules or major decisions throughout the majority of my life when it comes to anything related to me, my brother, and my father's lives. It's, you know, what she says goes, which is fine. I mean, I believe that's how a lot of families are. I believe a lot of mothers, you know, they've earned the right, you know what I mean, to make a lot of those decisions and stuff like that, you know, until it comes to a certain point where, you know, her kids are grown, her kids are adults, it's time for them to start making their own decisions. So, you know, after my mom and my brother, you know, they both sobered up through recovery programs about like 8 or 9 years ago. And I am now 31 years old. I turned 31 in January of this year. And I am finding myself in still some pretty crazy situations. So now that you know a little bit about the stereotypical type of environment that I was brought up in, let's see. I can begin to explain where I fit in amongst all of that. But before I do, I'd like to make one very concise and pretty well thought out statement, which is, there is a difference between being a victim and feeling sorry for yourself. At this point, I would like to say that in no way do I feel sorry for myself for what I've been through all of the abuse, all of the neglect, all of the trauma that I've experienced in my life. However, I will say that I am and have been the victim of a type of emotional abuse from a family member, which is basically unrecognized by the law and even by a lot of doctors or professionals as being a severe or serious form of abuse. And if you are going through or have been through something like this, like gaslighting, emotional, mental manipulation, verbal abuse, and damage to one's self-esteem from anyone in your life, I want to say that you're strong. You can and will get through this. You got to kind of have a sense of humor about stuff. Honestly, this is why I chuckle. This type of abuse is beginning to be taken more and more seriously every day. You know, you're not alone. And if you have found your way to this podcast, do not second guess yourself. You're here listening for a reason. And yes, narcissism and gaslighting by a loved one is real. You are not crazy as much as this person or people would like you to think that you are. So, in my opinion, this type of emotional abuse, you know, the mental manipulation, whatever, however you'd like to describe this, what's happening to you right now is so severe, maybe as severe, if not as severe, in my opinion, as much of the physical abuse that goes on between significant others and loved ones. Many people who are victims of this type of abuse do not live through it. Their story or their sides of the story is rarely heard or taken seriously for that matter. And I am doing everything I can in my power to advocate for people like us by getting the word out there in, you know, the universe and telling my story. I'd also be happy to listen to yours. I'd be more than happy to listen to yours. And I'll provide that information towards the end of the podcast. We still got a little while. Okay. So the emotional abuse from my mom started when I was around 14 years old. The first time she locked me out of the house, her home, was when I was 15. I was still in school. I did not yet have my driver's license. I had very little money as I was still dependent on a basic allowance type situation with my parents. When I was asked to leave the first time, which I believe was in like 2008, and has been happening ever since, as nuts as that sounds, it's like, why don't you just leave? And I did for, okay, so anyway, I stayed at a girlfriend's house the first time she kicked me out, who I had known from high school. Her mother was kind enough to allow me to sleep in the top bunk of her and her sister's bed in their bedroom. Her and her sister ended up sharing the bottom bunk, and Michelle, her mom, maybe I shouldn't mention her name, but I just did. Anyway, my friend's mom said, yeah, you know, you can have a top bunk for as long as you need. And yeah, so my friend and her sister were kind enough to share the bottom bunk for a while. And so this family actually had 5 kids in it. So the mom, you know, she was just had a lot on her hands, you know what I mean? And I was just so grateful that she took me in for that time. I was very scared. I was very confused. I felt like I was intruding on, you know, these people's lives, these people's families. But you know, I didn't have a choice. I didn't know where to go. And it was my first time being thrown out of the house, and it was scary. So from then on, I was finally invited back to the house. I was not using drugs or alcohol at this time. I did not use drugs or alcohol throughout high school, really. I may have drank a couple times. You know, I may have started drinking like on the weekends and stuff, like towards like my junior/senior year of high school. But I really was like not abusing drugs. I was not really drinking all that much. You know, my mom or dad, they never like had to deal with that kind of stuff with me in high school, really. And so, you know, I was then being asked to leave her home and not come back, you know, over and over and over again until I graduated. So I was ending up like homeless and penniless a few times a year until I turned 17. And then when I skipped a grade in high school, so I turned 17 and I skipped a grade through an independent study program through Brigham Young University, that I just could do everything online. Because I just knew I needed to get out of the house. At that point, I could not stay there anymore. It was just too chaotic and it was traumatizing, and I knew I needed to get out, and I had to stop relying on other people because I just felt like such a burden. So anyway, I skipped a grade, and this allowed me to graduate with my high school diploma at age 17. I moved from Southern California to Northern California, San Francisco, to, you know, go to college. I went and continued my higher education there for a few years. And then not only did this allow me to remove myself from the chaotic environment of my home and family, but I was able to, you know, work, provide for myself, continue my education, and meet a lot of really new, amazing, and interesting people around my own age. And so that was pretty good. I finally thought I had broken free from the shackles. So anyway, let's cut back to living at home with my mom during my early teen years. Lots of drinking and drug abuse, no respect for boundaries or my personal space, barging in on me while I was in the shower, screaming at me, calling me names, waking me up at 3, 4, 5 in the morning out of a dead sleep, calling me horrible names, damaging comments about my, you know, about my character, and, just pretty crazy, pretty scary. I was like afraid to sleep a lot of the time. And that was as young, you know, as like 16 or 17 years old. You know, I'm a young woman at this time, and this was really damaging to my self-esteem. It was frightening, it was confusing, and so many other traumatic things, to say the least. And like, I just remember, like, once I got, you know, some distance from that first situation of like my teenage years and I had moved to San Francisco, I remember looking back on that and thinking to myself, I feel like I don't have as much self-awareness as some of my colleagues or some of my peers and people in my own age group. I think a lot of that had to do with just being so preoccupied with like trying to survive that I didn't really get a chance to take the time to really, you know, become aware of, you know, who I was and what I liked and what I wanted and what made me happy and what made me confident and stuff like that. So obviously, as I had shared earlier, I was constantly being kicked out of the house, being forced to live with friends, but essentially being homeless and penniless, having to rely on the kindness of strangers to basically, you know, take care of me, because it was just, I would become, you know, comfortable where I was. She'd basically bring me back in, make me feel comfortable, like I could trust her. And then like, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, she's my mom. She wouldn't be doing this stuff on purpose. She's not consciously making these decisions to just torment her own daughter. Like, how could she? It doesn't make sense to me. So I would get comfortable again, and then, you know, I would be just caught off guard, and then basically, you know, the crap would hit the fan, and you know, it was just complete crisis mode again. So after years of this type of abuse, and maybe I think it was the first year I was living in San Francisco, I was actually diagnosed with bipolar disorder. For all of you who just stopped, you know, taking what I'm saying seriously, please just turn the podcast off now. I'm now currently considered by basically every psychiatrist that I have seen over the past few months, like currently, that based on my psychiatric evaluations, their professional opinion, I am in remission. I literally take no medication, and, you know, I'm fine, and I basically always have been fine. It's pretty clear to me now, you know, looking back, that there was always going to be something wrong with her daughter, which obviously is me. There's always going to be either a medical diagnosis or, you know, based on, you know, years and years and years of trauma as a young person, you know, you're going to have some type of, you know, mental or psychiatric reaction, I want to say, or response to stuff like that that happens to you when you're young, and especially when it's happening from a loved one, someone that you trust as a child and as a baby, your family, and in my case, it was my mother. So, you know, I'm sleeping normally, I'm functioning, I have clarity of thought, I make perfect sense, you know, the doctors are saying this. And for some reason, my mother is still continuing to call these doctors about once a month. This is currently like happening right now. Literally, my mom is calling my doctors about once a month, pleading with them to basically consider me what she likes to refer to as, quote unquote, gravely disabled, end quote. I am now 31 years old, by the way. My mom is not listed on any of my ROIs. And for those of you who don't know what an ROI is, it is a release of information allowing anyone you know to contact your doctors and obtain your personal medical records and history and all of that. And I literally just last week had a doctor call me explaining that my mom had left him a concerning voicemail and that if I did not sign the release of information for him to be able to contact her, that he would literally no longer be my doctor. I replied asking him if he was aware of how old I was and if he remembered me sharing almost every time I met with him at his office that I do not feel comfortable with my mom. I mean, I don't know why that is such a big deal, or, you know, maybe it is, seems like a big deal to a doctor or what, but like, I mean, I'm an adult at this point. I'm 31 years old. Like, I have to have some rights. And I just thought that was so bizarro, honestly. But again, she is very manipulative, like incredibly manipulative. So, I've ended up having to advocate for myself, as you will have to do as well if you're finding yourself in a situation similar to this. Okay, so anyway, back to what I was saying. The doctor decided not to work with me. And I would just tell him, you know, I don't trust her, especially not with my medical information, stuff like that. He told me that he did not want to work with me anymore because I refused to sign the ROI and told me to basically check myself into a psychiatric facility, that he could not help me as, you know, as we were in the midst of communicating with my private insurance disability company, trying to receive an extension on my monthly long-term benefits. He was sending them over, literally, he was sending them over my medical records once a month, communicating with the insurance doctor on staff there about my progress, and then just decides, nope, I'm not going to be your doctor anymore. Literally, you can believe that or you don't have to believe it, but that is the gosh darn truth. As bizarre as that sounds. So he's one of those doctors who basically, in so many words, stated that my bipolar disorder was in remission. Quoting that, and because there's been multiple doctors that have said that now, quoting that, you know, in my records that, you know, the doctor's appointments and all that, they were not as much, you know, geared towards the bipolar thing anymore, that was not as much the issue at this point as, you know, the trauma of my life and the trauma, you know, recently that's been happening in my life from toxic relationships and stuff like that, you know, that was really the issue. So, you know, literally that is basically verbatim what is written in my medical reports that were given to my disability insurance company. You know, cause I had to leave work about a year and a half ago for, doctor's stuff basically, cause I do have this diagnosis. So I've been receiving, private disability insurance, and I'll get more into that as we go on. But once he received a voicemail from my mother, which in my guess has nothing, you know, was nothing short of frantic, accusatory, and intimidating regarding me, who's her daughter. And may I remind you that he completely dropped me as a patient. So, you know, once he heard that, probably that frantic voicemail, he was just like, I don't want to deal with these people anymore, probably. Anyway, I'm 31 years old. I own my own vehicle. I provide for myself as of late through private disability payments, which I receive monthly and are about 60% of my previous income from when I was working, which is pretty good. I was in business to business sales and tech sales for many years, like 6-7 years. And I am pretty young, so that's, you know, a pretty good track record, I would say. And I get 60% of that income monthly that I was making through this disability company. So I do receive a livable wage through these monthly payments. My mom, at least, you know, in my humble opinion, should not be involved in this type of situation with my medical stuff. When I'm requesting that she not be involved and she, you know, that should not be involved. And along with the professionals in my life, as well as my own father, you know, are well aware that I truly believe that she is making these types of situations extremely difficult for me to handle, just overcomplicating my life, basically. And again, I will repeat, I am an adult. And if you feel this way, that you are an adult and you are not being kind of freed from the shackles of your childhood with your parents or whatever the case may be, you know, other people are going through this as well. And I am one of them. So again, I sidetracked a little bit. So let me refocus this again. So basically, after years and years of trauma and verbal abuse, I finally got out of my home, moved to San Francisco to go to college, then was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I fought, I fought my way through school with this diagnosis, which was shocking, confusing, embarrassing, you know, in and of itself. I attended doctor's appointments once to twice a month for 10, 15 years, where I was put on what is called a polypharmaceutical medication regimen. That is when your psychiatrist or doctor is having a patient take multiple medications at a time during the day, every day, which in my case essentially served, you know, all these medications were serving the same purpose. They were just different medications, all supposed to like basically help with mood, but I was on like a ton of them. You know, I was on a minimum of like 8 to 10 psych medications at one time, literally taking handfuls of pills every night in order to sleep, wake up and feel like normal. Like I hadn't missed my medications, because once you get on those medications, you have to keep taking them. If you don't, you know, you just don't feel normal. It's just a nightmare. I'm not, you know, obviously, as I said before, I'm not on any medications anymore and I feel completely fine. So no one thought or said anything about this for like 13 years. I was with the same psychiatrist for about, you know, 13 or 14 years. I was getting my lithium level test done, all of that. Apparently people thought this was normal. I was a zombie and still being abused by my mother verbally and mentally, maybe not in person all the time, but then, you know, over the phone, anytime I would answer, you know, my phone, it was just constant, you know, always an issue. There's always an issue. I could barely keep my eyes open. I was so over-medicated. And as my mom phrases it, basically to myself and all of her friends and people that love the chaos with her, is she always says this. She says, quote unquote, "If it's not one thing, it's another," end quote. So like, I've always listened to this and thought to myself, like, I don't know about you, but I can't imagine living day to day with that quote as my daily mantra. If it's not one thing, it's another. Like, that could not be my daily mantra. Like, I would be absolutely miserable. But I don't know, that's just me. So anyway, I honestly have touched on, I haven't even touched on even a third of the details of this relationship with this woman and what she's put me through over the years. But what I would like to say is that with a mother who now, you know, is portraying to her friends and family that she is advocating for me, who, you know, in her eyes is mentally, you know, her mentally ill daughter, behind closed doors, absolutely, she is just traumatizing me, screaming at me, calling me terrible things that are attacking my character. You know, they're just damaging my self-esteem. It's just chaos and insanity out of literally nowhere. And, you know, she makes people feel like she's doing the right thing and like she's this holier-than-now person. And I feel like no one really, you know, understands what she's putting me through, and people are getting their information about the type of person that I am through her. So when they meet me, like if they've never met me before, they meet me and they already have this preconceived, you know, notion or conception of who I am. And so it's very difficult when people have already made up their minds about you and the kind of person you are to change their minds, like once they are just getting to meet you. So it's kind of, you know, I've heard things about this narcissistic stuff where like, you know, the mother or the significant other or the loved one, it just basically builds what's called a smear campaign with the person that they're targeting. So this smear campaign is, you know, her basically smearing my name to every person who will listen, trying to get as many people on her side to make her feel that she is legitimate in the way that she's treating her own daughter. And frankly, it's just not true and it's not okay. And I'm here to tell you, it is not okay. And if this is happening to you, you know, please, like, we need to start advocating for ourselves, because it's difficult when you're the one who's in a vulnerable position in your life, and other people will see that and tend to take advantage of that. And I really did not honestly think that that is how human nature was until I became in basically a state of desperation, and I would reach out to people and ask for any kind of assistance, any kind of help, any kind of support. And I just was not getting any type of responses. And I realized, oh my God, this is really how people are. Maybe we're just not wired or like built as human beings to care about other people, to care about strangers, or to even care about acquaintances or people who we thought were friends that maybe aren't. I don't know. Anyway, that was another little tangent, but I hope you could relate to that. So back to where I was is, you know, she needs to survive, you guys. She needs to, you know, not be miserable. And the way that she's not miserable is by basically what they call, you know, gaining some type of narcissistic supply, which, you know, is documented as basically the way that a narcissist will refuel themselves to release some type of chemical in their brain that allows them to feel elated and allows them to feel happy. And the only way that they can do this is by creating some type of chaos. And they literally fuel themselves and get energy from, you know, targeting that person, whoever they've chosen to target, which in your case would be you or someone you know and care about, or in my case is me. And they basically refuel this way, and that's how they feel good about themselves. And again, it is a documented personality disorder. This is a real thing, you guys. And it's, you know, it's scary because it's really not taken very seriously by really, you know, any large organizations, you know, the law, the government, anything. So, you know, it is a real thing. And, you know, with this smear campaigning, you know, it's like, she raised me. This woman raised me. It's like, you know, am I Satan's spawn? Like, was she give birth to Satan's spawn? Like, I don't get it. It's like Rosemary's Baby meets Mommy Dearest type thing. Like, I know that's kind of funny. I don't know, but seriously though, like, I hope you just said to yourself, like, that's exactly right. Like, you know, like, I'm obviously Satan's spawn that she gave birth to, and like, she is Mommy Dearest. And I, you know, don't know why there's always a problem, why there's always an issue. But there is, you know, and it's kind of creepy. It's kind of scary. Like, why would my mom be treating me this way? And that is like really the major question. Like, why is someone that says and tells you and, you know, and tries to act as if they care about you and they love you and they have good intentions for you, but, you know, in reality, if you look at the situations and you look at the toxicity and you just get into the black and white of the situations and the issues, you know, if you can literally tell yourself, look, this person very clearly does not have my best interest in mind, no matter what they say, the situations that I'm finding myself in whenever I'm, you know, with this person, or communicating with this person, or whatever the case may be, the situations that I'm finding myself in are not good ones. They're not positive ones. They're either getting you into trouble, or they're making you feel terrible about yourself, or whatever the case may be. So it is a little bit confusing. However, you know, we're going to work through this together. So I'm going to conclude this episode by saying a few more things. So, you know, my mother, who, you know, has been portraying me to friends and family, you know, as though she's advocating for me, you know, is really not. Behind closed doors, that is absolutely not what's happening. And so, you know, as you know, this is the first episode. I hope you've gotten something from this so far. By the way, I'm going to conclude the episode with some brief some of my brief, humble opinions that I've basically cultivated over the years through living through this toxic relationship, and that should kind of conclude and close this segment. You know, hopefully it'll make a little bit more sense to you. You know, I've outlined this as well as I could and as detailed as I possibly could, but there's so much information and just stuff and crap that, like, I'd like to get out there for people. That, you know, I'm sorry if I was jumping around. So number one, to conclude, you know, number one, if you are involved in a toxic relationship or with a toxic person, please do yourself a favor and remove yourself from the situation now. It is only going to get worse, and you need to stop the bleeding as soon as possible. Stop traumatizing yourself or allowing someone that you love who truly does not have the capability to love you back continue to traumatize you. Number two, human nature is based on equitable relationships. What have you done for me lately type stuff. Sad but true, as anyone who has been in a state of desperation knows and who has had to rely on the kindness of strangers, this is the way it works. Number three, anyone who is going to laugh at you, if anyone who's going to laugh at how you feel about something that is happening in your life, i.e. your reality of a situation, is simply trying to delegitimize what you're thinking such that they can further manipulate other people into thinking or siding with them. This is a narcissistic character trait, and I am so sorry if you are being targeted in this way. Number four, resources are few and far between with, you know, when it comes to this type of emotional and mental manipulation and neglect, unfortunately. However, start documenting every situation. Record, videotape on your phone, post blogs, use social media, whatever you have to do. Just keep documenting if you are not in a position to remove yourself from this type of situation. And in my case, I was abused and neglected by my family members for so many years as a young person that growing up was complete and utter insanity. It was confusing wrapping my head around the fact that my mother was behaving as if she was competing with me, almost. You know, she was rarely happy for my accomplishments, still rarely happy for my accomplishments, unless she could take some sort of credit for them. She was incredibly emotionally abusive and neglectful, saying, you know, and screaming things at me, you know, since I was a young teen, and that, you know, these were truly attacks on my character. Like, looking back, I did not ever really know how to judge or develop my sense of character at that time of my life. So being told daily that I'm an inconsiderate F-bomb, you know, a bad person, a liar, a thief, etc., was a little bit confusing, especially when this is coming from my own mother. And even if it's coming from a spouse or significant other, it is never absolutely ever anyone's right to judge your character. If anything, that is God's job, you know, or like the universe's or whatever you believe. It is no one else's right to do that. So, you know, I will conclude with that. It's been about, you know, a little over 30 minutes. You know, I definitely have a lot more to say. I have a lot more of my life and my experience to talk about. And I really would like to start getting feedback from an audience. You know, if you're listening right now, please feel free to reach out to me if you're going through something like this. If you're in some sort of crisis where you feel that you do not have anybody to advocate for you, you're looking for someone to help you get out of a toxic relationship. If you do feel that, you know, a lot of these personality traits that I've described that I had found in my mom, you know, you're finding in someone who you're in a relationship with, any type of relationship, these are absolutely narcissistic personality traits. They are to be taken seriously because at the end of the day, you know, this type of emotional abuse and mental manipulation is scary, and it affects, you know, people, it affects the victims of the relationships. And, you know, it should be spoken about. It needs, you know, we need to get the word out there that if you are suffering, I understand what you're going through. I believe that emotional pain is a very serious type of pain. And, you know, some people just don't live through it. Other people fight through it, whatever the case may be. You know, it's time that we stand up and start, you know, at least getting the word out there that this type of abuse is serious and it's painful, and it puts, you know, the victim in the relationship into a very, very vulnerable place and situation, almost as if they have nowhere to turn. If you'd like to get a hold of me and you have any questions, concerns, you know, you need advice, advocacy, anything like that, I am involving myself in this niche, as you could call, you know, as you might call it. Again, you can reach me on social media at Miss Marissa Leonardi, or my email is mleo949@gmail.com. Again, that's mleo949@gmail.com. That is absolutely my personal email. You've just received my personal email address, and I would be more than happy to talk to you if you have questions, you know, or even if you have any type of feedback for me on my first episode that I've made here. You know, I'd be happy to hear it. I'm open to any type of recommendations on, you know, where you guys would like me to go with the podcast, what you guys would like to hear more of, you know, and I'm willing to get, you know, feedback on that kind of stuff, recommendations, all of that. Again, it's at Miss Marissa Leonardi. It's my Insta name. And thank you so much for tuning in for my first podcast. This is obviously episode one, and I'd like to start making podcasts, as I said, once a week. I hope that you enjoyed yourself. I really hope that you're okay. And I hope that, you know, this at least brightened your day a little bit today, knowing that, you know, there are other people that are going through the same things as you. And, thank you so much.